So, on behalf of Pradeep, I am welcoming everyone. So, this is a question-answer format. So, if anyone has a question, we can start with that. Pradeep had asked me to take up the secret knowledge, but I thought let it be like a question-answer rather than... But anything from anywhere... Any questions? Okay, if there are no questions, any answers to the current world problems?
Nowadays, we all are suffering from some diseases. How can we do?
This is a very, very, very good question actually, that why there is an upsurge of diseases recently, last few decades, and becoming more and more. So there are several reasons for it, but two, three prominent reasons. One is that many diseases, first I'll come from the normal, ordinary reasons to the deepest ones. So one is, of course, the most common is the lifestyle change that has taken place. So this is, just a moment. Pradeep bhai, we just started, please come, yes.
House full,
yeah? Yeah.
This is the only time we have house full.
So the question she asked is that why do we suddenly see an upsurge of diseases in the last few decades? It's a very beautiful question. So one such thing is lifestyles, which has changed drastically over the last few decades, largely because of the level of physical comfort which has been given to us. So many things like walking, eating habits, practices, all that has gone now. So that's one straightaway reason. There is the mounting stress because it's become a hyper-driven society. So everybody wants to achieve, and achieve more and more. And you know, it's a vicious cycle because the more you have, the more you want. This, it's like a blind well. And there's no limit to it. It's like an inconscient abyss whose hunger cannot be fulfilled by any amount of pouring into it. So this is the second reason, that there is an increased degree of stress on humanity at several levels. Psychological stresses, social stresses. Third is that the whole society is going through a massive shift, change. So stress is not only because of other reasons, but also because it's very difficult to adapt to this stress of change which is taking place. And this change is beyond our reckoning, beyond our imagination. And let me put a shocker, it is for the good. Very difficult for us to comprehend. And so often when people ask me that, so I say, see, God doesn't consult us. He brings the change. And the classic thing is that on the battlefield of Mahabharata, Arjun asks Krishna that, what are you here for? So he doesn't say, I'm here to play the flute and enchant people. He says, I'm here to destroy all of them. So he was not just destroying human beings, he was destroying a whole old world order, which included the good and the bad both. Even the best in the old world order, which included people like Bhishma, Drona, Karna, all of them went down. Only 18 survived out of 18 Akshahini. So right now the old world order is going, it's gone. We may cry, lament, feel stressed about it, but as I said, divine will. So at the same time, there is an accelerated pace of evolution, something new which is going to come, and people are trying to reach out, as Mother says, thought of the future, but they don't know. It's baffling the intelligence. So this is the third reason that why people are getting more and more ill, because there is a dislocation. There is inability to keep pace with the forward march of humanity. There is an increasing inner resistance has come up which were not there earlier. So this is a third important reason. But apart from these three reasons, which are rational, which are, you know, genuine reasons, there are other reasons which you'll be surprised how much market forces drive these things. So many diseases are also because there is a saying in Hindi, Behti Ganga mein haath dhona. So a lot of doctors, you know, they are almost, you must have heard now, Corona is coming back and all this. So there is a lot of money involved in it, in pharma company, and this is the dark side. The first three are very, very genuine reasons. They need to be addressed. But there is also the greed of human beings and paucity of time. I have given talks on this, how researches are skewed in certain directions. Now you see on the vaccine, Moderna vaccine, not Moderna, the other one which Pfizer had taken out. They are putting, they've been compelled to put that, you know, there is a risk of thrombovascular accidents, you know. This is because it was there. And there are a lot of, along with it, iatrogenic diseases. And I'll give you one commonplace example which I had been saying this for quite some time, but now people are doing research and finding it. For instance, we have diabetes, which is due to blood sugar. And India is regarded as a diabetic capital. Do you know a strange reason why diabetes took place in India? Why the upsurge? It's not just because we are giving sweets on every... It's because there was a famine, created famine in India in the 40s. And it's documented. So subsequent to the famine, the genes within the Indian population mutated. So they started drawing energy from other sources, and therefore the insulin resistance, because people would die out of just fall of sugar and all these things. Now this mutant gene has led to more obesity, all these things. So partly creation, iatrogenic is creation of man. How human beings have contributed to the illness. Medicines, a lot of people die, even in diabetes. I have been saying this, that, you know, it's a double-edged sword. If you give more and the blood sugar comes down to a little lesser level, it can, the tight control, it can create its own problems, because now enough sugar is not going inside the cells. I'm not going into its technical details. So there are a lot of iatrogenic diseases which have come up. And lastly, the third dark side of reasons, that you see, when research is done in medicine, even by genuine researchers, what do? They see symptoms, study it, and then they put a label on the disease. Now this label is like a dark formation, incantation. It works. I have this, sometimes a prestige issue. I had a corona variant. You had only simple corona. Psychiatric disorder. I have my own psychiatrist. Almost like, you know, having a pet dog. So it's become such a prestige issue. And the formation which has come, this labeling diseases has made it worse. And I'll give you just one example which I saw today, Pradeep Bhai. So somebody wants to go for a course to Jindal. So they have mandatory ECG. I did the ECG. ECG shows that there was an antroceptal infarction, myocardial infarction some time back. And the person says, but there is no history. So when I probe, then say, once I had a little bit pain here and it was pretty severe, but okay, I took it as one of the pains and it's fine. And she has been normal, absolutely normal. But you go to a doctor, I can tell you, you have gone with one problem, you'll come back with 5, 6, because that's how medical world operates. I am talking of the genuine doctor. It's not that they are bad people. The moment you enter, that's why mother was never keen to, you know, she would say hospitals contain a formation of diseases. And the moment you go, now increased visits to hospital, increased formation of disease. It's not just about contagion. So these are some of the causes why there is so much disease. But mother gave a very simple remedy. Okay, fine, remedy. She says, unite with the divine forces of evolution. Align yourself to the cosmic purpose, if you want to use a more secular language, or join yourself to the divine will, accept the change and contribute in a beautiful way. Because change comes with a double-edged sword. So when we take that, then the more we align, and that's the true sense of yoga. Yoga is alignment with the divine. So this is why, and it will go on until we wake up to this need for an inner change. Otherwise it will go on, because the evolutionary forces are unrelenting. Sri Krishna, when he took a decision that, okay, there will be Kurukshetra. All the great ones, which included people on this side, Drupad, Virat, the children of Draupadi, all of them gone. Because then it's something very powerful. So my own reading is, I had almost spoken about it in 2012-13, that next 14 years are going to be very difficult for Earth, and you know. And this is going to mount, the pressure is going to mount, compelling humanity to shed the resistance and accept the change and go with the change. Again, change I'm using in a inverted commas. Yeah. Otherwise, crashing succumb. That's what Mother gave this particular message, that the future of the earth depends upon a change of consciousness, and the change is bound to come. See the imperative command, change is bound to come. But it is left to men to decide whether they will collaborate with the change, or the changing is being thrust upon them by the power of crashing circumstances. So that's what we are witnessing. We can put it like this, they are the labor pains of a new world. That's how Mother put it.
So how to collaborate?
That's the whole yoga, how to collaborate. Two things which are most important, which I feel we miss out on in this hyper-rational age, which is dying actually. Now we have entered into the post-modern era, so even reason has no meaning. In modernism said reason, it slew faith. Now post-modern is slay reason. So we are hanging in between. So faith and will are the two most important gifts given to us. So faith, that regardless of anything and everything, if there is a divine, I am using a logical faith, though faith is inbuilt, if there is a divine at all, this world has a divine destiny. And if there is no divine, then anyways it is meaningless. So we can put it like just a logical analysis. But there is a divine who will lead us through everything. This faith immediately aligns us. The second is will. And while, of course, in yoga we say will to unite with the divine forces, but we can very simply say will to progress, because there is a tremendous pressure to progress, to evolve. And anything which refuses to evolve will crash and collapse. So old world order, comfort zones, whether it's a religion, ideology, we don't have to worry. It will collapse, because these are tremendous. So the will to progress, the will to grow, to know more, to learn more, to love more, to everything, in every way to go beyond the human frame towards something which exceeds human. This kind of children are coming more and more. I see them. So this is the in short. Otherwise there is the whole yoga. But faith and will. And Shobindu puts it that whatever is the sure idea in man, which he holds as cherishes and holds it as dearest to him, closest to his heart, and if to that we can add offers to the divine, surrenders, that he will end up realizing. So we have here a very great importance of choices. So we can choose in our thoughts and feelings to align with the grieving, complaining lot. Take this analogy that the ship, Mother has described, the supramental ship. It is moving ahead. You can look towards the shore and cry about what is being left behind. Used to be a song of Mukesh. Huh? Mera sundar sapna toot gaya. Mukesh, nahi, sorry, Samshad Begum or something. Mera sundar. You can lament about it, fine. But nature and divine will walk its way. Or you can look toward the future, that look beyond the description, destruction. There's a beautiful passage in Savitri which comes toward the end of the world of falsehood. And it says, he saw in destruction creation's hasty pace. And death as a cellar of the house of life. And hell as a shortcut to heaven's gate. So this is the passage. So what will make people endure? Two things Mother specifically emphasized on, or rather three things. She spoke of capacity to endure, because this is a passage. It's not going to be easy at any level. So endure, and faith gives us the endurance. Second thing she said is plasticity. Because when change is very rapid, if you don't adapt to it, then it can be very hard hitting. Because it's going to be, and it's going to be more and more, at every level actually. We only look at science and technology, but that's a different kind of challenge. But at the inner level, the entire, you can't associate with what used to be 40 years, 50 years back, or 30 years back. So plasticity, and the third is wideness. That's so important. Yes.
Very emphatically. That was about 100 years ago.
Yes.
So, Kaliyuga is departing.
Yes.
And the kind of pressure it is creating.
Yes. So, this is the age of transition actually, because when Kaliyuga departs, it is not like a sudden change. So, you will have, when Satyuga comes, he has used the word, the first mornings of the Satyuga are already there. He's writing in 1908 or 9. And when Sri Aurobindo was asked in 1909 by a Tamil correspondent that how do you see the future, he said, I see a lot of revolutionary changes amidst which India will become free. And then he speaks about India's son of destiny of India rising and overflowing India, overflowing Asia, overflowing the world. This is, you know, people back then in the British Empire would have laughed, I'm sure. See, so this has been already decreed. Let's put it like that. So, but he says that every time when a Satyuga comes, and this of course there in spiritual literature also, you will see several, the all the four yugas repeat in a miniature way. So there would be in Satyuga, 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 and then there would be a Satyuga, Trita, Satyuga, small. Then Satyuga, Kaliyuga within Satyuga. And that is because it has to purge many things. So what really is Kaliyuga is? Kaliyuga is, one is the working on matter, material base, and second is a purge. Like the night. Night is a purge. So first impulse when we wake up in the morning is to cleanse ourselves and to throw away the waste. So human. So this will come as all these illnesses and all these patterns, because man has to purge himself. It's beautifully described in one of his poems, In the Moonlight. Any questions from anyone?
Is this true that they said that one yoga will leave and the other is, so there's a dovetailing, period of dovetailing?
Yes, yes. This is what I am referring to.
So that somewhere in the Shastras, it's mentioned that that period is 175 years.
There are two kinds of, see, one is the Shastra which is based on the Manu Smriti, where the Kaliyuga figures are astronomical, and I have discussed this with people, and now more and more people realize that this is not true. It's a misreading of years, and I have given a whole talk on this. There's not 4,32,000. This is the most depressing figure you can ever read of Kaliyuga, and I have a very simple logic to it. I said, see, at least you agree that at the end of every Rama belongs to Treta, this is agreed. Parshuram belongs to Satyuga, this is agreed. And Krishna belongs to Dwapar. These three are agreed. Now see the timelines. So we'll get an idea of how much roughly each yuga is about. So these figures are astronomical. This is one part of it. So yes, there are scriptures which don't use that astronomical figures, and they are the ones who speak about the 175 or 150 years of 150 years, Sri Aurobindo has mentioned, of dovetailing from one into another.
Not all that bad.
No, it's, I see so many beautiful signs. I'm afraid people sometimes...
It is a couple of generations.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. And we all will come back to see it. Probably in this very life.
We won't remember.
Well, I think we'll remember, because once you get the psychic being, you remember. You remember some of your past lives, so you can remember. But I mean, that's not so important, because we are moving to the future. But children, when I see these children, amazing, absolutely amazing. Many of these children, they are just questions, they're the way they are. But if we look for the change in the political figures, we'll be most disappointed. Because politics and finances are the last to change. New world will never be through an act of parliament. Okay, we declare new world is open, it won't be. If they say such a thing, be careful. What are they doing? And all political parties all over the world. It's not something, you know. So that's not. The change will first declare in children. It will declare itself in the thought and imagination of people. It will inspire certain films, it will inspire stories and, you know, fiction and all these things. It will inspire. It will declare itself in certain soft fields. I mean, soft, not in terms of there, but in terms of impact. So it will declare itself through education, the need for change in education, psychology, health. It will begin to declare itself in these. And that it's already started. In health now, in Jipmer, our Jipmer, you must be knowing, a few days back, they've integrated the course with the Ayush ministry. Okay, we may use the word that this party, that party, but it's a very good step. Many doctors don't like it. Well, they don't like it because dukan band hogi. Yeah, very simple as that. This idea that we know it all, there is a lot to be done even in the field of Ayush or understanding Ayurveda, but that apart, at least there is a beginning. Mother gave a message to Jipmer, truth, veritas, curitas, truth cures. So we are moving in that direction very much, and just a question of time. And these things, you know, the change, once it picks up momentum, it's exponential. That's something very interesting. So there's been studies on evolution, and in college, in FMC, I used to have discussion with some of these friends. And who wouldn't believe in God? And I also had not read Sri Aurobindo. But evolution was a common subject for all of us. And for somebody like me, it was divine. And for somebody who didn't believe in God, he said, but we can't deny evolution. It's happening at a rapid pace. And what the non-believers would say, that, well, it's a geometrical progression. Because up till a point, things change slowly. And then they pick up. When it picks up, it's like, you don't know what's going to happen 10 years down the line. So this 150 years dovetailing, another 20 years may be a leap. So that's how it is.
You spoke about faith, will and yoga.
Yes.
At an individual level, if one has to progress to realize. Within yoga, when you look at karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, though we talk about integral yoga, is there a particular form of yoga that one needs to spend more time on, or is there a path around it?
So, the type of yoga, nature of yoga that one takes, I'm not talking of practice now, but just the broad line, will depend on the goal of the aspirant. So, the path opens based on the aspiration. So, very often when people speak of different paths and they try to compare, so my whole question is, what is your aspiration? Now, if you want moksha, let's say, one of the things, then pick up any of them. It doesn't really matter. Pick up whatever is convenient to you. Then there is no question of integral yoga if moksha is the goal. Why should I do all that complicated trimarg and all this? If I'll pick up one path, maybe just some breathing exercises and quietening myself, and, you know, by whatever means, I'll arrive at moksha. But then there is the other ideal. Moksha is one ideal for which any path can be taken. This is the other ideal of the Jivan Mukta, which Sri Krishna actually places in real earnest. It's there, it existed in King Janak and others, Ajat Shatru. Ajat Shatru comes much later than Sri Krishna. But this ideal Sri Krishna fully describes. So that's where Trimarga, because if you have to, and I personally have a, before Sri Aurobindo, this is a wonderful ideal, because I always felt that a mukti which is dependent on any condition, be it departure from the world, cannot be freedom. Freedom by its nature should be unconditional. Whether in riches or rags, I am a god. That's how Shivindu says in one of his poems. So if I have to be, say, in a forest or don the sannyasi's garb or join an ashram or do some, that kind of life, then it's not really freedom. It can be a road towards that. So the widest freedom possible is through the Gita, the Sri Krishna's Trimarga. And then beyond it is the yoga of transformation, which means implies that the world itself is preparing for a big change. And if we are really interested that the world should change and not just I realize something, my own experiences, my own achievement, whatever it is, if we are concerned about the condition of the world and this world should become a beautiful divine place. There are some mad people, who have that kind of aspiration. Many of us are sitting here. So then it is the yoga of Sri Aurobindo. So the term which Sri Aurobindo used for his yoga, one was the integral yoga. Second was integral yoga had been put in different ways. The second term he used was supramental yoga. So basically it's the yoga wherein supramental consciousness, which is beyond the spiritual, how that can operate, become functional and transform our human nature. And the most beautiful name of his yoga that he gave, which I love personally because it carries the key to the whole thing, is Mother's Yoga. Yes. The Mother's Yoga, Mother's Yoga. It's a term Sri Aurobindo has used. So Mother's Yoga implies that, well, Mother is the key to the change. So the yoga becomes opening to the Mother, receptivity to the Mother, giving oneself to the Mother. So it becomes much easier. And there are reasons for that, because some people say, well, supramental consciousness is there, force is there, I can open directly. And Sri Aurobindo says, technically it's all right, but most people who do that land up in a very horrible copper, because supramental force is not, something which is, it's not just powerful, it's truth conscious. And we see that happening today, it strips bare everything. So one of the things, just as an aside, somebody asked me yesterday, I want to put my child in the ashram school. Should I or should I not? I said, if you are ready to go beyond formats, do it. But if you have formats, my child should be like this, my child should be like that, you have an idea of what your version of ideal child, then forget about it. It's a very dangerous place. So the person said, why? I said, because it'll bring your truth out. This place will bring the truth out. And truth in two layers. First, what is hidden behind appearances? We may label it as good or bad. That's not how divine sees it. He brings it out. As simple as that. If you can go through that passage, then your deepest truth will also come out. So the Mother's Yoga, so when supramental acts, which we see all around the world happening, nobody is safe, there is no cover of falsehood, the latest being today that the American president is close to being, a big money trail has been discovered, all kinds of, that how the crypto coin was used, now that's one part, just very latest news I am telling you. So you can't hide behind any mask of power. It started with Bill Clinton, the seat of the highest power, and you can't. Before that, you see Reagan and others, they could conveniently cover up, but with the relentless pressure of truth, nowhere, you see, go to Bangladesh, you see here, you just can't hide. And here, the pressure is very intense, and in those who are opening up, it's very, very intense. So that's why Mother spoke of enduring, because we have a very neat picture of ourselves. We are all good people. Only the neighbor is bad and our enemies are the worst. So Gita long back said, Atmanev, Atmanev, Bandhu, Atmanev, Ripur, Atmana. But we didn't believe it. We read it, of course, a nice sloka. The self is the enemy of the self. And the self, or rather the self is the friend of the self, and the self is the enemy of the self. So now we are confronting that all the problems, obstacles are within us. Nobody else is responsible, and that's true autonomy which these children talk about. I often tell them, if you want to be free and autonomy, you should not say that because of someone or because of these circumstances, I am experiencing this in my life. Take charge of your life. So in yoga, you are compelled to, because all these layers will be stripped open. And is one ready? All those things which we cherished, which we held as a mother uses a very nice term, shibboleths. So, we hold on to all our conceptions. At one place he says, if you come to yoga, you should be ready to hang with a slender thread of faith. All your conceptions, all your ideas, all everything dashed to the ground. And just with this slender thread of faith, your country, your religion, your family is here, the divine. So this is a very exacting process. So when we turn to Mother, she makes it this way, like what we have read, of course, all great masters in some way do it, that Guru Kumhar Shish Kumbh hai, Antar Hath Sahar De Bahar Mare Chot. So he will support you from inside. Guru is like the potter and we are like the clay. So while, you know, when you make the pot, you have to put one hand inside to support, and from outside you mold it. So you have to do a little bit of tinkering and tuck tuck and pressure. So that we experience when we turn to the mother, that while on one side the process is a process, it's exacting, it's very demanding. But on the other hand, the mother's love supports it. She uses the word, it's a big cushion. Divine love is a big cushion.
How do we make it easier for ourselves?
Complete surrender. And a sincere surrender. Sincerity and surrender are the two. And certain things which we must safeguard against, because unfortunately yoga has also fallen into the trap of vanity. I am a yogi, superman, and with the people start, you know, experiencing golden hair and light coming from the body and experiences. I had this experience, please. Humility is the safeguard. So to know, and actually it's a sign also. I say that if you are really genuinely touched by the divine, you'll become very humble. Simply because you are in presence of infinite. Automatically, it's like it will happen. But unfortunately, you know, so humility is so important. There is a very nice, the examiners. There is a writing of the mother. And there she speaks of the three kinds of examiners who examine us. And how to each one we can tackle. So the key is sincerity and surrender. Sincerity means thereby to see in oneself where are the issues. They will be shown to us, but normally we deflect it, we see it in others very readily, and or we give it a nice color, or we justify. So justification is very dangerous in yoga. It's okay in outside life. So it's not like one has to condemn oneself when one discovers, and you know, there are plenty of things. One should be happy. Oh, I discovered something, this is going to be swept out. And if we remember it, it happens. She takes care. Even seemingly impossible things from nature will be weeded out. But the process is there. So sincerity, growing more and more sincere as time passes and as we grow. And the second is surrender, surrender, surrender. As Shobindu says, surrender is the beginning of this yoga. Surrender is the detailed surrender path of this yoga. And a complete entire surrender is the culmination of the yoga. And surrender means, now there's the other part, that surrender is not I'll do nothing and mother will do everything. There's no such free bonanza. Surrender means I let the mother do everything and all that I have within me is offered for her. That's, I often explain surrender like this, that you know, you see the picture of General Niazi surrendering to General Arora in the Bangladesh 71 war. So what does it mean? They did use, they surrendered. What does it mean? Now, whatever you guys say, we are ready. We have to listen. We have no choice. So then the surrendered army cannot say, I want some 5-star hotel accommodation. You may get, you may not get. You may be in the barracks. You can't demand or claim anything. You obey whatever way divine keeps you. So equanimity, everything comes as part of the package. If once we have surrendered to the divine mother, whatever way she keeps us, whether she gives or she takes, or because nothing really belongs to you. So surrender is a very, very challenging process, but that's the path. So everything has to be given to her. Even the faculties which develop, capacities that develop, they have to be surrendered for her work and not for, oh, see, I have this power, this capacity, I can heal, I can do this. This I has to change into, what shall I say? I use the word me has to change into ma. me has to change into ma. And in Hindi we say mai. Mai has to change into ma. So I slightly play on this. Mai is a bakra. You know, the goat says mai. So when somebody does too much of mai, it's like, don't be like a goat. Because goat is sacrificed by both Hindus, Muslims and Christians alike. A goat is, a, you know, will be sacrificed. But if you do ma, cow says ma, at least the Hindu will take care of you. Even a cow knows ma, divine mother. So every time something in us says me, I, catch and say idiot throughout. Yeah, please.
So if one sees things in oneself that, you know, you have to offer, you don't want that, you want to become more beautiful, more harmonious, but they come up again, you have to offer.
Oh, so perseverance.
My question is, know the difference between offering and surrendering.
Okay. So, but before that, let me touch upon that it comes back. So yes, when you offer, it comes back. Certain things come back again and again. Certain things come back few times, then go. Certain things just vanish. So it's like that. So the most resisting parts come back again and again. So, but if we notice carefully, you'll see that the frequency of the surge of these resistance, its intensity, the will's capacity to, you know, work on it, they begin to change. So anger, which was the norm of a person, now I have seen actually in front of my eyes in so many people, and of course within oneself. So it begins to become much less in terms of frequency and intensity. One is able to control it. So that's how the quality becomes weakened. And Shobindo describes it in a very beautiful essay called The Process of Evolution. So he says, when a tendency takes root in nature, so you can't do nigraha. This Sri Krishna also says something very interesting. He tells to Arjuna that you are trying to do nigraha, it won't help. You will sit there, you will start getting irritated when you see your own kith and kin getting hurt, like Achilles. He was, you know, he sits in the camp, divinest plans. Then his nephew gets killed. Then Achilles comes in that, you know, super angry mood and massacres the Trojan army. So the same thing applies, that nigraha, force suppression, is not the way. Offering means we acknowledge there is a problem. And then we give it to the mother. The problem is there. We are not able to completely do anything with it, so, but we are offering that, mother, I am connecting this with you. So her action starts. So offering is a first step. We are still continuing with whatever we are continuing, because we are unable to, you know, let's say I have a greed for food, let's take a concrete example, and I am not able to resist the rasgulla in my plate. So I eat the rasgulla, but before eating I offer it to the mother. This is an offering. I am still eating the rasgulla. Surrender would mean, if mother says take away the rasgulla, it takes away. But offering is the first step. Then I consecrate. So there is offering, there is consecration. Consecration is sanctifying. So consecration is where I wait, I offer it, and maybe I'll take it like a prasad. Half a rasgulla, it's okay, it probably won't make my diet. Then the third layer is, I imagine a rasgulla. Rasgulla is far, so I can't have it. I have no choice, but it's there. My mind is still with the rasgulla. I can't control the mind. It still goes on to the rasgulla, so it's not surrendered mind yet. So I am still, though General Niazi's soldiers have surrendered, they are dreaming of one day they will go back to Pakistan, or Ghazwa-e Hind will take place. But if we persist in offering, a day comes when we are fine. Rasgulla or no rasgulla, when it comes, it is a prasad. When it's taken away, it's gone completely. So with all the vrittis, it takes place. So offering is the path that leads to surrender.
Yeah,
There is remembrance of the mother.
Constant. Yes. Yes. So constant remembrance. So constant remembrance is the method through which the offering goes. Because constant remembrance is also a reminder to us. Rasgulla, ma. It's mothers. So with people, with objects, with everything, we know that it is not mine. It has been given to me. And though I am apparently enjoying it, apparently it's in my name, but it belongs to mother. So how should I use it? Let's say a house. So I'll give an example, like, you know, if a house which is consecrated to the divine mother. This problem has come up and people often say, I said, see, you have said you have done graha pravesh and this house I have consecrated to the mother. But you are allowing all kinds of nonsensical things to take place. So actually you have in theory done it, but in practice you have not done it. See, that's why sincerity is a very exacting process. So this is my logic when people say, why can't we drink and smoke inside the house? I said, not in a house which has been consecrated. You do whatever you want to do, you have freedom. In whatever house, build your own house, mansion, do whatever you want to do. But in a house which has been consecrated, it belongs to the Divine Mother, and so on and so forth. So that's where all our defenses get stripped. So when we keep on offering, maybe one day we'll regard that this whole house is her temple and I am only a little trustee sitting here. Tomorrow it'll be in somebody else's hand. See how the mother deals with, there is a very nice prayer of the mother while arranging familiar objects. And she says that when these objects pass into other hands, may they, these hands be caring towards them. Even objects. This is an example of what consecration means. She is using the objects. Who cares about objects? Even a handkerchief, when somebody got some new handkerchief and mother says, mother, why are you using this handkerchief which has been roughed several times? She says, oh, you want me to use new handkerchief? Then she smiles. She says, you know, this has served me so well. So that consecration is something which refines and purifies. And when it is surrendered, then everything belongs to the divine. In fact, all is divine, but that's the final. Very exacting process.
What is the role of the, in surrendering, the role of the psychic?
So psychic is the one which prompts. Psychic is like the director behind the stage, you know, in old time theater. So there is a role person who is playing the role. Director has told him and he has remembered the dialogue. But he forgets. So there used to be a prompter. Then you are supposed to say this. I remember a funny incident in school time playing a role. So before the dialogue, the person shot the gun. So it was so funny that, you know, he's supposed to say some things and he got into an excitement, he shot. So the prompter has to say, this is not the way to do it. So psychic is the hidden prompter to start with. There are other prompters which try to distract us. So psychic always prompts us in the right and the light. So it keeps orienting us to start with. But till one is aware of the psychic, what happens? Normally some part in us is open. That part which has come to yoga. So in the mind it will come as a suggestion. I don't think I should do it. This is not beautiful. Now it's still the mind, but under the prompting of the psychic. Or it may be the heart. That, well, I have given myself to the Divine Mother. What is this I am doing? Or it may be the vital, which may say that, why am I making a fool of myself? Even though, you know, I have given myself to the mother for her work and I am making a fool of myself. Is this how a mother's child should be? So initially psychic is prompting from behind and whichever part is open receives it. But then we should not stop there. We should go deeper. And when once one not only discovers, becomes one with the psychic, then it becomes an automatic process. Jisko bolte hain, system mein aa jana. So the whole system gets tuned. That's how it's described in Savitri. The immortal's thoughts displaced earth's bounded view, dull and drab sense. So normally these thoughts, like, you know, based on either the ego and its quarrels and desires and everyday things, that will become impossible because now one is living in the psychic. Initially, it'll be so long as the psychic state is there, it'll be impossible. Later on, it becomes a way of life. You cannot, even if everything around you is conversing it, you just cannot because it becomes impossible.
Yeah, the awareness increases.
Yes, and the power. The heart, it'll be impossible for the heart to feel selfishly or, you know, desire for itself. It'll be impossible because now the psychic has taken over from the mind. Certain tendencies of the lower vital will become impossible because of the psychic identification. Before that, there would be a gap. Something is saying, you know, to be, and the other is saying not to be. Like Augustine's famous prayer, Lord, grant me chastity, but not yet. So this is the dilemma which continues.
तो अब ये साइंस जैसे आपने बताया भी ये शुरू होगा कलयुग के बाद सतयुग आने के तो जैसे आत्मा प्रोग्रेस करती रहती है अब तो जैसे कोविड के वेरिएंट नए आते रहते हैं लेकिन युग तो जा रही है तो इसका मतलब जो युग है उसमें भी कुछ ना कुछ वेरिएंट नया आएगा
हां एब्सोल्युटली
और दूसरी चीज ये भी जैसे वो सतयुग में जो प्रिवेलिंग सतयुग है हम सब सोचते हैं उसमें पहले उसमें ही विकेट गिर गया गौतम मुनि ने श्राप दे दिया तो
So that's very nice. It takes us to how the cosmos works. So if you see the four yugas and the action of the divine in these four yugas, so in Satyuga, English, so in Satyuga, the divine manifests as the Yajna Purusha. So he is in the heart and you cannot deviate from the truth of the heart. That means the psychic being is guiding you to whatever extent. So there is no scope of error. So in Satyug, classic, ideal Satyug, you don't need any rule, law. It is a divine anarchy if you want to put it. There is no external control. You don't require it because human beings live by the truth of their own self. So obviously there is no quarrel, harmony, unity, all this becomes natural, brotherhood becomes, all this becomes absolutely spontaneous and flawless. So that's Satyuga. Why did it fall? Because Tarjan lives in Satyuga where he spontaneously acts rightly, but he cannot understand or explain what he's doing and why he's doing. So nature includes mind, heart, life and body. They also want to participate. They say it's wonderful. You are living by the law of truth, but we don't understand anything. So in Treta, there comes the mind. It's the age of the great philosophies. Now truth is cabined into this philosophy, this school, that school, various types of Vedanta, all the scriptures come, debate, discussion, thinking, Janak, Sabha. So Ram, he must deliberate, think, and then he would act, you know, so much. Is it dharma? Is it not dharma? You see, with Lakshman, there is a whole discussion. Lakshman says, hell with it. Your dad has, you know, our dad has listened to that woman. No, we don't obey him. Ram, bro, you should be the king. But Ram tells him that, no, why this is not the way. You see the way he discusses about Vali, why he is killing. So all this goes on because it's an age when the truth must represent itself in intellectual terms. So the mind must develop. So it loses the purity of the Tarzan. There was an age like that. Tarzan is, of course, I am using the word figuratively, when truth is spontaneous. Tarzan, like in the biblical sense, Adam and Eve, they are spontaneously right. There is no shame, guilt, nothing. But mind must now intervene. So mind develops in Treta. Then what about the vital? Now, vital comes fiercely in Dwapar. So, in Dwapar, now in Treta, truth is no more in the Yajna Purush. Truth is as the Chakravartin. In the king, the divine descent. So, all the kings are regarded as descendants of Vishnu. And the ideal is of Chakravartin, which is through Ashwamedh Yajna. So, king is the one who must hold dharma. That's why Ramarajya. Ram must hold dharma. Nobody else can hold dharma. So the entire Treta is to create one Ram. That yes, there can be a king who is the upholder of dharma. Then in Dwapar, it is the heroic age. So everywhere there was a heroic age. You see the battle of Troy everywhere. And in India, it's the great Mahabharata. Mahabharata is very different from Ramayana. Ramayana is war, but it's very different. In Mahabharata, all over, all these great heroes from all over India and some even from abroad, a foreign intervention, they also come and they join the bandwagon. And it's the age where truth must manifest as heroism, courage, act of giving yourself. The vital is being purified, attuning itself to the truth within. And that's where we see, what is the dilemma? Bhishma, should fight or not fight? Drona, should I fight or not fight? Abhimanyu, should we kill or not kill? Karna. So it's about the heroism. So it is the age when it's no more the king, but there is a code. So there is the great codifier Vyasa. So there is a code of conduct of the Kshatriya. You don't find that in Ramayana. Ramayana, they are discussing, you know, what should be the dharma. But it's not like Kshatriya, his honor is this. So there is a codification taking place in Dwapar. So now the vital in man comes under a control of truth through the code of conduct. For Brahmin, there is a code of conduct. For example, Brahmin is not supposed to earn money. The state has to take care of him. In Kali Yuga, what is left now? The physical consciousness. So there is a complete breakdown of all law. So that's why it is said the first is the age of Brahmin, the second is the age of, you know, Kshatriya and Vaishya, and then there is the age of the Shudra. So now in this age, it's labor, physical work, physical things must manifest in the material level. So there is a great preparation going on in matter, which we see today. All said and done, this degree of preparation you don't find in all the achievements of the past, great though they are. This degree of working on matter and material substance. Now when all four have been worked upon, then what does the divine do? Okay, fine. Restart. But that new Satyug is higher than the previous Satyug. Because all these have been worked upon, so the new Satyug comes. So this is how it spirals. So it's...
How did the Kaliyug prepare the Satyug?
So Kaliyug prepares because now the obscurity of matter has been taken care of. To the extent it can be taken care of. So then once that happens, there is a purging also in Kali Yuga. Many things which are hidden, like for instance people say and that many of the political parties, they are the remnants of the ambition, unfulfilled ambition of the Kauravas. It's known, it's predicted in the Bhavishya Purana. It almost uses a name that, you know, some of these characters come here. Dhritarashtra is known, will come as a person called Gandhi. Is there, divide, because you know there is unfulfilled ideas and ambitions, so they are being purged. So once this purging takes place, cleansing takes place, at the most obscure level things begin to change, then you are ready for a new ascent. So like this spiral, we ascend to a point. Now what Sri Aurobindo says is, now is the point where you of no return. So I use it with the, boomerang, or you do this movement. So sometime the hammer is in front, sometime behind. Then it develops a momentum. When you throw it, it goes very far. So six spirals of the Chaturyug. The seventh one, it is supposed to enter into, in physics, what is called as an escape velocity. So it doesn't fall back. So Mother and Shubindu say that this is the one where, you know, it is the seventh creation in Indian scriptures. There are 14 creations, so out of which this is the seventh, in which Shraddhavan Manu, he is the one for this Manvantara. And after this, there is no falling back. So it's like a preparation which goes on.
But this is the ultimate satya.
Is the ultimate. But now when we say ultimate, because ultimately there is no ultimate. In that sense that now Satyug will... in 1,000,000,000 ways, divine will be expressed. But the difference is, it's ultimate in one sense that up till now, it lapses back. So there is a fall into ignorance coming up like Planet of the Apes. But in now onwards, there won't be a lapse into ignorance. So the evolution will be a happy, joyous, from freedom to greater freedom, joy to greater joy, light to greater light. That's how he describes in Essays on the Gita. So that is a big difference. So it's a leap.
So the
cycle
is over.
Cycle is over. Cycle is over. Which makes a very big difference. Evolution in terms of manifestation, then we can't use the word evolution, but manifestation. And what all will be there, we don't know. Inhabiting Venus, to start with. Andromeda, doing Brahman, everybody like Narad, let's meet somewhere up in the skies. But all this code of conduct, which is gift of Dwapar, breaks down completely in Kali. So a kind of anarchic state comes, which is what we are seeing now.
So it said that when Krishna died, Dwapar ended.
Yes. Yes, that's how it is. So the story of Mahabharata, though it starts with Dunduvi, and you know, then if you read the Bhagavad particularly, it's not Mahabharata, but Mahabharata also recited like this, that it is King Parikshit. So Sut, Sonak, they are all sitting on the banks, and then they start, you know, what happened? We have heard about it. Janvijaya, who is holding a Nagyagya. So he says, I have never seen my great grandsires, and they are such wonderful, powerful people. Tell me about them. So that's how the whole thing starts. So it starts with Parikshit, and how Kaliyuga starts. Parikshit is the son of Abhimanyu. And yes, so the interesting part is that if you see in Mahabharata, there are basically five Pandavas and the Parikshit, the real survivors, and there are some accursed survivors, and all five, all six plus Parikshit, they have not come through just the normal process of sexual reproduction. Parikshit dies in the womb, other five we know. Parikshit dies in the womb and Shri Krishna gives him life. So they are all in a way symbols of new creation. They don't carry that kind of baggage. So as the story goes, that Parikshit is sees a cow which is lamenting. It is on 2 feet, obviously a symbol. He says, who has done this state of yours? Or 1 foot, 1 leg. He says, Kali. He says, why? What has he done? He says, my 4 leg are, one is dharma, the other is tapa, and one is faith. See, I am only standing on faith. Everything has been cut. Now faith has also gone in the previous century. So it's the end of the whole thing. Darkest darkness. So he says, I am only standing on faith. So Parikshit says, who did this? He says, Kali. So he chases Kali and finds Kali, and he says, I am going to finish you. He says, but I am being sent by the Kalpurush. You can't kill me like this. So what do I do? He says, give me a place to stay. It's a very interesting story. So he says, you give me a place, there I'll stay. So he says, what place you want to stay? He says, I want to stay wherever there is gold. So common man doesn't use gold, so average person will be free. So he says, all right. So he enters into the mukut of King Parikshit. So gold goes to the Juwakhana, wherever there is financial world, gold. So gold reserves. So the beauty is, just after that, Parikshit does something which normally he would not do. There is a rishi, Sringi Rishi, who is meditating, and he sees a dead snake and puts it in his neck because he's trying to wake up the rishi, and rishi is absorbed, and suddenly, though a scion of the Pandu clan, he says, oh, you don't listen to me. He gets into arrogant state. He puts up a snake and puts it around, just like children do to scare you. And while he is gone, the rishi's son comes. And the moment he sees somebody has done this to my father, he says, whoever did it will die of the same snake's bite in 7 days. Now, when the rishi comes out, he says, you shouldn't have done it, because he's a wonderful king otherwise. And then the Bhagavat is born, because he has 7 days. So he can either call the doctors, put rapid dialing, emergency services, get all, maybe go and get admitted in ICU in advance, whatever way, or life-saving drugs. But he does a smart thing ultimately. He's advised. He says, why are you afraid of death? You can be free of the fear of death and discover immortality. He says, is it possible in 1 week? He said, yes. Then the story starts of Dundupi, who was inside a bamboo and he got freed from Bhagavat. And then the story of Bhagavat narrated to Parikshit, and Parikshit after 1 week he says, I am ready to embrace death. So this is how the Kaliyuga process starts. So it's also a symbol of untimely death. So otherwise when you look into Dwapar, Trita, it's like untimely death was regarded as a blot on the king. That is why in Trita you have a whole story of Shambhuk's killing by Rama. Now I am not going into, because temptation of getting into all these stories, there are plenty. But basically untimely death is a parcel given by Kaliyuga. Otherwise you don't find that in Dwapar. Once in a while the story comes of Ruru, but Ruru brings her back to life. So there was those possibilities. Ikshamrityu was there. So Parikshit dies an untimely death through these means. And in Ramarajya, that is why it is said, Ramarajya is not just about fine governance. It says, Daihik, Daivik, Bhautik, Tapa, Ramaraj, Kahu, Nahi, Vyapa. Because the king was the upholder of the dharma. And if anybody is sick, the king took it upon himself that somewhere I have deviated. Okay, so I think...
there's a story where the king had gone on a hunt and he get seriously isolated. So he was feeling very thirsty. And he saw this orange. The gardener was there. So he said, so he just half an orange and this big glass got filled up. So the king was very impressed. But while going back, he said, this fellow must be making a lot of profit. So I should tax him. So he taxed him. Again, sometime same incident took place and he got lost. Went to the same one. Three oranges and half a glass of water.
Yes.
So they said, what happened? He said, my king has gone wrong somewhere.
So that's what exactly. So Vishwamitra syndrome, I want the Kamdhenu for myself. That's it. Okay, so thank you so much. Just I can sit for hours and
I had asked for something else.
We'll have it again. We'll have it. I'll read a passage. Okay. I'll read a passage. Since we are talking about Kaliyuga and how the divine comes, and I have to just resist the temptation not to get into it. Okay, the passage is on page 55, book 1, canto 4, The Secret Knowledge. Thus will the masked transcendent mount his throne. When darkness deepens, strangling the earth's best, that's the Kaliyuga, when all lamps are gone, and man's corporeal mind is the only lamp, as a thief's in the night shall be the covert tread of one who steps unseen into his house. A voice ill heard shall speak, this soul obey. A power into mind's inner chamber steal. A charm and sweetness open life's closed doors, and beauty conquer the resisting world. The truth light capture nature by surprise, a stealth of God compel the heart to bliss, and earth grow unexpectedly divine.
This canto.
Okay. Oh, yes. Chema.